Welcome to The Authentic Life with KL, the podcast where we throw out the rule book, where we dive in head first to the real and raw, unapologetic journey of living the best life. That includes lots of music. This is your go-to space for empowerment, for deep healing and owning your authenticity like the boss that you are. We're here to break down walls and slay self-doubt. Vibe to the soundtrack of your soul. With every beat and lyric, we'll move through stories that heal and empower. You can live your fullest and most badass life. Welcome to The Authentic Life with KL. This episode of The Authentic Life of KL is brought to you by Break the Silence, a nonprofit created using music as a platform to raise awareness for mental health, suicide prevention, and recovery of all kinds, offering hope and starting the hard conversations to bring communities together. Hey guys, it's Kitty. Today we're diving deep into the topic of generational trauma and healing. You see it play out in families over and over again, patterns that repeat, wounds that echo, behavior that feels inherited. And the truth is generational trauma is very real, but so is generational healing. So in this episode, we're starting right at the beginning. What is generational trauma? What does it look like? How does it shape us without us even realizing it? And how do we begin to break those cycles so the story doesn't keep repeating over and over? This is a powerful conversation. So if you're listening today, maybe you're the one in your family who's meant to change the direction of the story. Maybe you're that lucky one, like me and my upcoming guest. So here's the definition of generational trauma, just so you have a full understanding. Generational trauma is the emotional, psychological, and sometimes even physical pain that gets passed down through families when one generation doesn't have the tools, support, or safety to heal. It's the unspoken words, fear, shame, survival patterns, silence, anger, perfectionism, and people pleasing. It's things that children learn through their environment, not because they're necessarily taught. It's because they watch the adults before them carry those burdens. It's the weight that you feel on your chest that doesn't always feel like it started with you, but it still feels really heavy. It's the reactions that you have that you can't explain. It's the triggers. It's the triggers. It's the stories your family never told, but you still feel. Generational trauma is what happens when pain is inherited, and healing begins when someone finally decides that the pattern ends here. So it's not fun. We have a lot to talk about today, and we're going to give you some really great examples from us personally and also just some well-known ones maybe you can connect with within your healing journey. Today, I have with me Rebel. Rebel. The bestest Rebel from Revelation Paranormal. She is so much more than just Rebel. She is a paranormal investigator. She is a life coach. She is my yin to my yang. We balance each other out pretty well on so many things, but she is one of the strongest souls that I've ever met. And she is a big leader within our community of helping others kind of find their authentic self. Welcome in, Rebel.
Hey.
How you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. Ready to get this episode over.
Yeah, this is a tough one. It's a toughie.
It is a tough one. Yeah, we'll go through so much more later on in the episode, but I think generational trauma is something so many people don't talk about or think about when it comes to their own healing because we're so focused on it just being us that's the problem. And I think that this was really eye-opening when I looked even a lot deeper into like my family history and stuff, and you start recognizing patterns. I think it's pretty impactful when you can dive into it a little more.
Absolutely.
So I have a couple of examples, and these are kind of just textbook examples, and then Rebel and I are going to go through some questions and be very vulnerable and talk to you about some examples and answer those questions openly for you guys to understand from a personal perspective what that looks like. But these are kind of three textbook examples, and you may see yourself within these examples as well. Number one is the family that never talks about feelings. Rebel, do you have a family that doesn't talk about feelings?
I do, very much so. And for a long time, I didn't talk about my feelings.
It's hard.
And didn't even realize that was a pattern within the family either. So that's That's a good slap in the face.
Feelings and emotions are gross. So I'm just going to read through this and see if any of it relates to you, Rebel, or myself, or anybody listening. The family that never talks about feelings. A grandmother who survived hardship learned early in life that emotions were dangerous. Crying got you punished. Softness got you hurt. Vulnerability got you abandoned. She raised her children to be strong, which actually meant to be silent. Those children grew up believing emotions were a burden, so they buried everything, grief, sadness, even joy. It all got buried. Now the granddaughter sits in her car after arguments, crying quietly because she doesn't know how to express herself without feeling ashamed. She doesn't know why. She apologizes for having needs. She doesn't know why she hides her hurt, but she's carrying emotional suppression that started long before she was born. How do you feel about that?
Well, in my story a little bit, within our community, when you read that book, it didn't start with you. That was really my eye-opener on carrying the things before we're even born. For example, me actually always feeling like I was put in the wrong body. Well, then I found out later that my mom was always told that I was supposed to be a boy up until the day that I was delivered. So that emotion, that emotion, all of it, that feeling, I think is what carried into me feeling that way now. So yeah, that would be my example in my own experience.
I think that that's, I think that that's hard because, I don't know, I think it's hard because we have so many things that happen to us, even when we're just inside our mom's bellies, right? There's so many things that happen that people do not give time and thought to think that maybe that could be part of it. You know, we're taught that inherently something's wrong with us, and it could be just generational trauma that's sitting there waiting for you to work through. And that's one of those things that, don't you feel like that was a big eye opener when you read that book? And it's like, wait, what?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm like, well, if that's the case, if those feelings carry over, what other emotions or trauma or, any stressful situation while I was in her belly am I carrying as well? Because that one was like, okay, well, that makes sense on why I might feel this way now. But at the same time, what else is in there? Because that's only one little tiny, grain of sand in the whole picture. So it's like, what else could I be carrying that's not mine to carry, not only through my mother, but my grandmother and so on, along the ancestry line.
And I think when I found some of those things out, I end up getting kind of, I mean, we'll talk about this later about the whole like healing process and stuff, but sometimes I get pissed off at myself because I'm like, man, I carried that for like 40 years and it wasn't even like, that's so dumb. Do you know how much more like space I would have to like do great things if I could have dropped that a long time ago? And knowing it wasn't even mine would have been great. But I know we're where we are. Where we are at the moment, because this is where we're supposed to be. But it is interesting to look back on that and to think the difference, the different life that you could have had knowing these things sooner.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, number two, the household where anger was the only language. Have you guys met these people? I have heard this a lot when it comes to like my family lineage. It's like they're all a family of strong women. They're all bitch. They're all loud. They're all this. They're all that. And it's like, no. We were actually just, I guess, a lineage of people not being heard that felt they needed to be that way. And when I think about that, family's just angry. They're always mad, or they're always this, or they're always that. It's not always genetics in the way that people think it's genetics. Sometimes it's genetically evolved generational trauma as well. This one says a father who grew up in chaos learned that anger kept him safe. Anger made people back off. Anger meant control. So he brought that into his own family. Quick temper, slammed doors, yelling is his communication. His son grows up thinking anger is normal. It's the only way to be heard, but he also grows up terrified of becoming just like him. And one day, as he snaps at his partner and child, he hears his father's voice instead of his own. That moment of recognition is painful awareness that he's living out a pattern he did not choose. It was inherited. That one hits for me. There's situations within the family, especially with some of my siblings, and things will happen and they'll be like, I don't want to be like them. And I used to be like that with my mom. Like, I just don't want to be like her. But it's you, if you're not careful, you end up becoming that which you do not want to be. Right? It's wild, wild how that works. So the next one is the pattern of never feeling good enough. This one will probably get to a lot of people. A great grandmother lived in a time where survival meant perfection. You work harder, be quiet, never make mistakes. She passed that belief on to her daughter, who became a chronic overachiever, terrified of disappointing anybody. Then her daughter, today's mother, raises her kids with the same anxious drive. Be the best, do more, don't you mess up. Now the granddaughter is burned out at 14, melting under pressure to be everything to everyone. She doesn't understand why she feels guilty resting. She doesn't understand why slowing down feels unsafe. But she's carrying generations of perfectionism and fear of failure that was never hers to hold. That one's also, they're all very, very strong.
I
They're very
agree.
strong. I think that one, if I'm talking about a personal thing, that reminds me of having generations of, I'd say, women in the family. Like my mother, everybody that knows her knows she's a great artist. She does amazing artwork. But my granny, my grandmother, and my mom all were very self-conscious and didn't think like anything they did was really good enough. And they never thought anything that happened in their life could be good because they weren't good enough, and so it's a generational thing. And so when I saw that, and I had already, I mean, when I recognized that within my healing, and I realized I probably put some of that on my kids before I knew, like, you only know once you know. That made me forever want to change the way that I did things because it is something we inadvertently pass on that we don't mean to. All right. Do you have anything to add?
God knows
She's like, heck no. Heck no.
that.
All right, so these are kinds of patterns that we see in our personal lives and our families, even the people around us, friends, coworkers, and acquaintances. And I will say, when you become self-aware, and I know Rebel has had this too, but if you guys who are listening are working on healing or becoming self-aware, you will start to recognize things within yourself that you never ever thought you would ever recognize before. And whether it be like your own shit that you're dealing with, or whether you recognize it as a pattern within the family, it is a beautiful thing, but it's really hard. And there's a lot of things that come with that, from feeling guilty to being angry at yourself because it took so long, to being angry at your family for you being the one having to break this like generational curse, that you call it.
For
Anytime
me, a
you.
big one, I was gonna say, I don't know, a big one for me is like all the time that I wasted, kind of like you commented on earlier. Like if I would have known, I could have, had all this time or all this space to fill it with something different. I think that's where a lot of mine came into.
Because we hide behind a lot of things. I know that's with some of my family too. Not feeling worthy makes you hide and not be seen. And when you're not seen, okay, you feel like you're safe, but then you also see everybody around you that's seen, and you so deeply, and I think like fervently want that, but you won't give up the comfortableness of feeling not
Don't step
worthy
out of
to jump out there. And
that
that's where we're at today doing this podcast.
box.
It's just an interesting dynamic of it. Anytime you hear the people say the whole family is like that, all the men, all the women, that's the Hardison. I'm just using your last name. That's the
It's all
whatever,
right.
right? That's that. You use the last names like that's the Swope this, that's use the last name of some sort of characteristic, that most likely isn't genetic unless it's genetic, like the eye color or something. But if it's a temperament, an attitude, a behavior thing, it is more than just like chromosomal inheritance, right? It's the gifts that keep on giving. So
And my
anytime.
family is very highly that way. Like, that's just the Hardison way, you know. Our luck at work always goes like this, you know, like it always does this or it always does that.
Ours,
Yeah.
the main one that us was like, it's just the women, that's just how they are. And I just
Yeah.
saw my mom, like, I'm like, that's not how it is. You don't have to be that way. And I think I became very sad when I realized, like, you guys don't have to be that way. Like, once I realized that, like, I didn't have to, that's not how we are. And then you get this immense sadness because you're like, you guys don't have to be that way. You choose to be that way because you want to, use it as a cop out or whatever, whatever that may be. It's comfortable there where you're at saying it's just what we do, but it's
Yeah, because
not.
then that grief and sorrow creeps in because you're like, man, I see so much potential in you. Why can you not just see this? Like, I see it. How can you not see it? You know? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's hard. We've had that conversation before. It's hard. You watch
Yeah.
people and they are getting up and they're falling and they're getting up and falling, and that's fine to get up and fall, but it's over the same thing when you're like, all you have to do is, but you have to let them, heal and go through it at their own pace. And it's hard when you see how much potential they have and how much greatness that they can do. And you just have to watch, You have to, I guess that's where the whole lighthouse thing comes in for our community, is that, you have to watch, but maybe if they watch you be vulnerable and say all the stuff that they don't want to say, and maybe that's when our story, my story matters, right? My story matters because it can make a difference. So generational trauma is the same wound repeating through different people, the same coping mechanisms showing up in new faces, the same story being rewritten again and again and again because nobody was ever taught or even wanted to do a different way. The powerful part is the moment that someone recognizes it, the moment someone says, this pattern ends with me. That is when generational healing begins. And if you are chosen to be that person for your family, I'm so very sorry. I'm so very excited for you, but I'm so very sorry. It is a very long road and it's full of lots of different emotions, but there is support out there, right? There is support. We have our community that talks about it in depth. And you need to find a community, even if it's not ours, you need to find somewhere to go to get support to walk through this emotional shit storm. You're about to go
Yeah.
through, or that you've been
Yeah.
going through, right?
Yeah.
Can you imagine doing it
Absolutely.
by yourself?
No, because like I said at the beginning, you know, it was like on the beginning of my healing journey, like I didn't talk about anything. Like it was all in my head, processing, you know, analyzing, breaking down, you know, and once I started having that sounding board, I think that's when my perspective changed because it was always the same spiral in my head. There was no outside view, but yet at the same time, without that process, I don't think it would be where it is today of not opening up to, you know what I mean, to allow that opening up and stepping into that vulnerability. To let other people, because like you said, the ones that want to be seen yet hiding, you know, it's taking that step into that vulnerability to just to let see a lot of, you know, like a little micro piece of yourself being seen by someone else. It's that's the crack that starts everything opening up, at least in my experience.
I think it's hard. I know my healing journey started, of course, a long time ago, but I always go back to, I was the girl at concerts that, stood at the side. And I'm like, I just don't want to be seen. And they're like, bitch, you have red hair and tattoos and you dress like you do when you're you. Like, you don't want to be seen. And I'm like, no, that's just contradictory of everything. But I always, now that I look back on it, I know that the people that came over to see me when I was on the side, they're the ones that stepped away from their whatever and came and spoke with me. And that meant that they were talking to me with intention. It wasn't, I was just another person. It's they're there because they want to. And for me, that I guess subconsciously was the goal that I don't want people to bother me or to come up to me unless you want to. And if you want to, you can, but you have to get through all the, whatever. And so I think that was eye-opening for me because I'm like, I am a shy person to a point, and I don't let people in very easy. But if I'm standing over here at the side and I have tattoos and I'm tall and I got a big butt and I'm just there and I'm not gonna not be seen. So what are you doing? And that's exactly what it is. Your subconscious does those things. Like you don't have a choice in it until you start looking internal to kind of dive in and see what your subconscious is doing for you. Autopilot.
Yeah, and that's a hard one in itself, turning off the autopilot when it's been autopilot for so long.
And it's scary because it's comfortable being on autopilot. I feel like when you try to be in the moment and share moments with people, or you try to be in the moment and not think about all the things that you're kind of customized to doing, it's scary.
It's scary.
It's
Very
scary.
scary.
Vulnerability is scary. All right, so
But
we
yeah,
have
it's
some.
so freeing at the same time.
It is freeing because I mean, it's freeing for a lot of reasons, but I think it's freeing when you can be like your authentic self, and you know that the people that are around you are there because they want to be. There's no other reason. It's not because they're forced to be with you, because why in God's name would someone stay just because they're forced? But it's because these people are in your life because they want to be. And I think back on all the times and different people who go through breakups, or they go through different things, and they're like, well, they don't love me. And it's like, you never gave them a chance to even love the real you. Like, do you even like, does that make sense? Because it feels like we often get in all these friendships and relationships and stuff, and if the other person's not willing to grow with you, they don't really even love the real you because you don't let it out. And I think that that's something that so many people miss out on when they close up that much. Okay, I got 10 questions. You ready for these 10 questions?
Alrighty, let's
Right,
do it.
10 questions with me and Rebel. This is to help you guys understand a little bit more if you are diving into generational trauma, or you're wanting to learn more about it, or if you're even wanting to hear what does it even sound like in real life. We're going to try to give you some examples or talk about it openly and vulnerably. Number one, when did you first realize something in your family patterns did not feel like you?
So for me, this one was when the anger of a parent came out in me. Like I was having outbursts, I was letting the anger control me, control my actions to the point of just blacking out of anger and then ending up in jail. As to where, as we mentioned before, I always said, I'm never going to be them. I don't want to be like them. I'm never going to do it.
Here I
So
am,
I think
ma'am.
that was, yeah, sitting in the jail cell, but yeah, so I think that was my first eye opener of, because I always said I never wanted to make someone feel the way it made me feel. When the anger was taken out on me, and then not really being aware of that situation when it came up. And so I was following right in those footsteps until it hit the max where I topped out and it could have been a lot worse than what it was. And that kind of was my eye opener on the generational, because I'm not an angry person.
Right.
Like, it takes a lot to get me angry, but at the same time, like, you may get me pissed, but you're not angry,
Yeah.
So that I think that was my first eye opener with the generational stuff.
Yeah, I think I think mine is, there's a lot of different ones, obviously, we both could talk about, but I think one of mine is, the control, right? Having control means that you're safe. And even as far, and I talked about this in one of the other podcasts, but I tend to have friends now, the more healed version of myself, that really are like, let's just do it. It doesn't even matter. And I'm like, I think that that's because I always am like, no, I need to know this. I need to know this. And so I used to be, when I go to concerts, like, well, where are we going to stay? You mean we don't know immediately where we're going to stay? That's not safe. What if there's not a room? And it's like, what if there's not? Like, why do you care? You just go to fuck another one. But like, it comes through, like, in real life, on that control means you're safe. When you are in control, that means you're safe. When you don't have things planned out, that's dangerous. But that comes from being in an environment to where you only feel safe when you can control something, or being in an environment where you can't control anything. And when you're a child, or you're going through whatever you go through growing up, and there is no safety net, there's not something felt that's a safety net, I think that we always go to that opposite end of needing to control, because all this felt very out of control. So I think that that's when I realized, like, man, I'll be all right if I don't have a place to stay immediately. Like, I'm gonna be all right. Like, what is that? And that's what it is. It comes from, like, I need to know that that makes me feel safe. But I also think that when you have people who care about you, and then they realize those things, they're like, okay, well, it makes her feel safe. Then, let's meet in the middle. But I think that that's one of the first things that I really, really looked into and was like, oh yeah, that's not necessarily something like that I grew up and this is mine. It comes from something different. Number two, what was a moment that made you say, okay, this isn't just a one-off, it's a generational cycle?
So for me, it would be money equals success.
Yeah, that's.
It's so in my family dynamic, the generations before didn't come from a lot. However, they found their wealth, whether it be through someone else, a company, whatever, they found their wealth. And seeing the changes in them told me that it was not safe to be successful. And I also see that within my mother as well. There's slight differences on those perceptions of it, but it's all having to do with money equals success. And so that one for me is a big one because I was like, you know what? I will have absolutely nothing and I'll be all right. Like, I don't have a hotel room to stay in. That's fine. I got the car. I got a sleeping bag. Like, I'll figure something
Sleep
out,
in the hotel. What would I do?
But it was the attitude that I saw those family members take, having the money, having that success, to where they would look down on other family members for not having that comfortability within their financial stability. And it's like we're doing the exact amount of same of work, but it's out there faster than I did, if things were changed, you probably wouldn't have had what you have this early, yada yada. So for me, it's learning being successful is not about the money. It's about that feeling that enriches you in the core. Then what would I like to have materialistically in this world? You know, to me, I think that's where my love for the the little moments, like the small things, to where it's not materialistic. The things I can't get back, like materialistic, I can get back tenfold if I chose to, but it's those core moments that I focus towards more today than the money or materialistic portion. But at the same time, I still have that hesitancy to put myself out there, because if I make money and become successful, I'm going to turn into those people
Yeah,
with
are you gonna be an asshole?
that attitude. And you know, so I think that's that one is a big one for me currently.
I feel that one. I feel that one on different levels because I too have family that has money, and I personally don't feel any benefit from that, but I have family that has money, and I've seen different things within the family of what it can do, the positive and the negative. And I've also seen the other part of it of coming from part of the family who doesn't have any money. And then it's like, well, if you don't have money, then that means you're like this person. And then that's not what you want to be. So then, but you don't want to be like that person because then they act that way. But then this person doesn't have money and they're not accepted. And so it's finding that, like, well, fuck it, I guess I just don't care about any money. Like, but then I think that that digs deep or goes deeper because I think that, the ones that mistreat right before we know better to stand up for ourselves, I say mistreat, the ones who are just being who they are, it causes something within us to feel unworthy. And we feel like something's wrong with us if we don't feel the exact same as the other people. And so then we feel unworthy. And then we also have a fear of, well, I don't want to be like that person. That still goes back to being unworthy. Right? It's like we just want to be worthy and we just want to be seen. But if we do it this way, we're not going to be. But I couldn't make it that way, so that means I'm not worthy. And I think I struggle with that myself, but I do, like anybody could buy me $1 million present, $5 present, whatever. It's probably not going to mean the same as time that people, put when people put aside time for me. Like that means again with me that like you're here because you want to be, right? It's not because you feel guilty and you need to buy a present. I like presents, but if they come only with the gift of money, that comes from a sore spot for me because that means that's how you show your love, and I don't want love received that way. Now, if you show up for me and you give me time and you want to give me money, I'm okay with it. Like, don't feel like, guys, you can't give me money. But I think that there is that hesitancy that I don't want you to show me your love by giving me money. I don't want that. I think time and moments that can never be replaced are so much more expensive for me, or at least they're appreciated in a completely different way. And so I feel that on the money part. I think that so many of us struggle on trying to live the lives that we want because we've absorbed this unworthiness because we don't have, but then we don't want to be like what they don't want, and that's still just unworthy. So just wanting to be worthy.
And that's like, in my family with my dynamic, my cousin could go ask the person with money for a certain amount, and then I could go ask, for that exact same certain amount, and that person would give it to my cousin, but not to me. You know what I mean? So it to me it ties all into that not being worthy, whether it's to someone else. And it just
What did I
spirals into
do?
so many,
Yeah, what did I do so wrong that I'm not worthy like that person is?
Yeah.
Right. Like, how do I need to act? You know, let me see how they act to figure out how I can act to be accepted to, you know what I mean? Like, and it's always morphing into something more of what you're not than actually finding, you know, not being able to see that pattern and like work through it. It's just,
Constantly trying to be worthy to other people when and we're inherently worthy because we're here, but we feel like we need to prove it to everyone to receive. Yeah. Number three, in your own healing, what was the hardest truth you had to face about where those patterns came from?
This one's a hard one for me. The hardest thing I had to face was seeing the patterns, figuring out for me where they came from, and then trying to, you know, go back through the lineage and see exactly where it started. But in the immediate family, it was more or less, these patterns are not what defines me. It was learning things about myself and being able to recreate how to bring that new self image in there after seeing the patterns and changing everything. It was, oh, well, I'm not as worthless as I thought I was. I'm not this, like everyone, you know, I'm not too much because everyone's told me this for so long. I'm not shy, like everybody tells me. I'm more observant. You know what I mean? Like everything that I heard that I took as my own truth within those generational patterns, learning that it wasn't me was probably the most impactful of going down where they came from.
I think that is impactful to start understanding that while it's yours to heal and take care of, and find a way out that it perhaps didn't start with you. And when you've been in the generational shitstorm, you grow up thinking this is just how it is.
This is just how I am. Because I always question, why am I like this? Why can I not do anything right? Why can I not, you know what I mean? Because I was seeing and getting everybody's responses of, that's not right. You're not doing this right. Like, you don't need to do it this way. You need to do it that way. You know what I mean? Like, always being critiqued. And it was like, okay, well, what's wrong with me? I can't ever do anything right. Obviously, I'm not worthy. I'm not good enough. I can't do this. You know, and then, of course, the years and decades of, you know, that downward spiral happens.
I think another one for me is I mean, looking around and trying to dissect, and going back generations, and it's like, oh yeah, my great grandma did do that, and then that, and then that. But then I think facing the reality of what is mine on it versus what isn't, and the part that I play in this whole generational, I keep calling it a shitstorm because that's what it is, but in the generational shitstorm of it is understanding maybe it does come from other people, but understanding your role that you play in it, and that I played this role for a long time. And when you're just a loud person, it's just who you are. It's like, no, just don't piss me off. But I'm actually a very loving, like feminine energy, nurturing person. But when you're forced, I say forced, when you are in an environment to where you cannot be that, you only know how to be one way. And so understanding the part that I play in it on What do I really want to be? What do I really feel inside? What doesn't feel safe? What does feel safe? I think that is another part of where it comes from for me. I was surprised at how much of an impact I have on, how do I say that? How much of an impact I have on the lineage and everything that we've been told is us. But then all we have to do is change it. You know,
Sounds easy.
it does. It does, but I think the hardest part about changing is just that self-realization on it. I mean, I know it's not, don't piss me off. Like, I'll get loud, but I think overall, I think that that's the hardest, one of the hardest parts is understanding, like seeing where it comes from. And yes, that's hard because you've accepted it as your own for so long, but then seeing where you play this huge part in the story, and you can choose to say, yeah, that is what we all are. It's just what we are. Or you can say, no, that's actually not what I am. And then you have a whole, the whole healing of like, okay, I'm not that. And then people being mad at you because now you're different and you've changed and, you know, all those different things that come with that. So I think that for me, it's like, I've known where it comes from. Also changing to where you're not like pointing fingers. Like, oh, so this really is your fault. I knew it's your fault. Thanks.
I wanted to do that a couple of times, and I'm like, it
Way to
didn't start
go.
with them, you know, like it carries on generations before them. So it's like, I have to remind myself, I can't point the finger, you know, because I mean, in my past, I played the villain, and boy, I was good at pointing fingers, you know, and again, you know, after all I've already done, I don't want to go back to pointing fingers. So it's as easy as it would be to be like, you did this to me, you know, like, yeah,
It's
it's
your fault.
hard.
It's your fault. And back there, it's your fault. And yours.
Yeah, it's hard to keep the anger out of it, you know, to keep that clarity, but at the same time, it's human emotion that comes with it, you know.
How do you think generational trauma shows up in subtle ways that people don't always notice? Like behaviors, reactions, beliefs. Stuff like that. Do you know any that people maybe wouldn't notice?
So for me, I was thinking about this earlier. It's kind of like, you know, when we talk about the shadow work, the little boy scrapes his knee, dad picks him up, men don't cry, you know. Suck it up, blah, blah, blah. You know, like for me, those subtle things would be almost the things that we learned subconsciously, not knowing, you know, like the money equals, you know, success equals money. You know, I didn't come to that realization until what, a couple years ago. You know, I just thought it was, well, I don't want to be like that. You know, and I think it's the subtleness of how easy it is to be programmed in subconsciously without being seen for so many generations.
We're all literally being programmed from our generations before us. And generations ahead of us are being programmed by what we're doing right now. And that is not just genetic. That could be, you know, family lines. That could be friends that you have. It could be all these different things. When you share your story, you're not only changing your life personally when you share your story or make an impact, it's the people around you, and it's generations ahead. You know, when people really are impacted, it changes a whole lineage, but it changes just the whole future of so many people. What is something you once believed was normal in your family that you later realized was a trauma response?
Being left to your own emotions. Being left to deal with your own emotions by yourself, especially as a child. You know, learn that's where you I learned that being silent is better than speaking up. Or if I spoke up and it was reprimanded, then okay, let's not do that again. And I think everything that comes along with that, whether it be the self-analyzing on what did I do wrong, what did, like that, or it's the other person's voice creeping in, I think that's probably the big one for me.
I think something that I thought was normal, and I'll go back, this is just a huge one in my family, is yelling and screaming. Just yelling and screaming. And it's not necessarily physical violence, but the louder the louder you are, that's just like who you are, right? You're just loud. And it's not everybody in my family. It was the women in my family. And I know I talked about this earlier on it, but it really is like go all the way back to my great great grandmother Jessie. Like everybody was loud, and we have that conversation with my mom. We're like, no, you're not all loud. It's just because you felt like you had to fight to be heard. You fight to be heard, but you don't want to be seen. But you fight to be heard, but you don't anyone want anyone to see you. Like make it make sense why we do the things that we do. You scream, but you don't want to be seen. Like it doesn't make sense, but and
Yeah.
that's what, when I told her, no, everybody screamed generations and generations back. Sometimes, like my great grandmother, she was vile on some of the things that she would say, but that's what she would say to be heard, right? So that is not just how it is. That's what it was normal growing up. And that's not, it is trauma response 101. It is nothing normal about that. You can have a conversation and not be vile or scream. It is okay. So that's one for me for sure. How do you navigate the guilt that comes from breaking cycles, especially when your healing makes other people feel uncomfortable? That's a hard one. It's hard.
So, on for me, that's when the inner push-pull starts. The new me wanting to have the freedom and move out of it to break the cycle, but yet the old me that's willing to be comfortable to just. I don't want to ruff any feathers. I don't want to, don't want to have to walk on eggshells because if I say something wrong, it's going to trigger you because now my throat chakra's open and I'll tell you how it is now, but it also comes in hard setting those new boundaries too on that portion of it. So I'm still working through that section of it just because it's, like I said, it's the old versus the new me. It's always been this way, and I know if I just go back to this way, it'll smooth things out for a while, and then we can deal with it when we hit that bump down the road. But yet at the same time, the new me is going, no, ma'am, we have done too much work to just
Like
be
that, I feel
told.
like we're scared. Like, I know situations with you as well, but the guilt that comes with setting boundaries because it's like, wait a second, you did what? That's not what you do. Well, I mean, that's what I'm doing now, right? How do you navigate? How do you navigate through that, Rebel?
I'd say with that, it would probably. Recently, I keep telling myself that obviously this boundary was set for a reason. You know what I mean? Like, there is a reason why you took the time to think about setting this boundary and what it would entail for yourself, not only, but also it may also be a boundary to help them as well. Like, if I've helped somebody too much, and I set that boundary of, well, I can't help you today. And they're like, oh, it's not only for myself, for maybe it's a day I need to rest. Like maybe I'm physically not feeling well. And if I keep pouring into everybody else's cup, obviously there's a reason why that boundary was set. And when that guilt starts to creep in, I keep reminding myself what it is, like why I initially wanted to set this boundary in the first place. Because I mean, if it's a bullshit boundary, I'm not gonna like try to enforce it in the first place. You know what I mean? But if it's something that I feel deep down at that point, then it's going to, push me to do it
I think
and
that
stay firm with it.
one of the things we've always talked about in the community is with boundaries and those kind of things, because you do feel guilty, especially when you're one that's like, I'm not worthy. I'm trying to do this to make me give you a boundary, because then you're not going to like me, and I'm not going to know why you don't like me, but I'm the one that did it. But it is that you have to be okay to be the villain in someone's story when it comes to boundaries and your growth, because I've had the experience of like, what do you mean you're only doing that? That's not what you do. It's like, well, why is what I do lumped into one whole category? Like, it might be what I do, and then it's like, but if I do that, it's going to hurt their feelings. Do I want to hurt their feelings? And I think that I had to learn it's not about hurting their feelings or not hurting their feelings. It's about respecting and self-love and knowing what I need. And if I know that I need time to do something or time to process something, or I need to only be there for 10 minutes, then that's actually a really healthy place. And when people are on the opposite end, sometimes we're on the opposite end of that too. And it's hurt and confusing. I mean, like whenever you're on the opposite end of mine or whatever, it's like, wait, what? No, that's not who you are. But if I need time to process something, then that's good. Like, that's good for me, but I don't want to hurt anybody. But I think that's where that communication comes in on it, because no one wants to be the villain. I mean, well, some people want to be the villain, but a lot of people don't want to be the villain to anybody. We just want to be healthy ourselves and love who we want to love and live happy lives. But it's not always that simple, I think.
And I also think that, setting the boundary with that other person, especially if you know their trauma triggers, like if they have the abandonment issues or if they have, whatever it may be, it's also trying to be aware of that to not spiral them out, but also placing that healthy boundary along with your guilt, along with being okay if it does trigger them to a point, So, I mean, it just kind of all encompasses around that guilt of the whole pattern breaking.
Yeah, because I don't think we're trying to go into things trying to hurt people. And I think that people need to realize boundaries are so you can keep a relationship. And that's what a lot of people don't understand, is when someone figures out a boundary, I can't do this right now, or I can do this right now, or I can only do it for this amount of time. Like, that's because they care about you so much that they're giving you a road, right? Or a bridge on how to love them. Like, they're literally writing it out for you. This is how you can love me. This is what I need. And if you choose not to come across the bridge, that's fine. But like, it's to salvage and to save, and to keep people close. It's not usually done in an intention to push people further away. And I think typically it does push people away, but that's not the reason behind it usually. Usually it's someone finally deciding that, their energy is worth taking care of, and it should be celebrated. It really should be. Number seven. When did healing start feeling like a reclamation instead of a rebellion? Rebel.
So I've been a rebel most of my life. So when I think about this question, it's still kind of both for me, because it's feeling that spark and that fire starting, of just getting those little bitty tastes of healing, even though as messy as it got to get there. It's like now that I know what can be there and how much freedom just that little piece gave me. For me, it's both. Because I'm going to obviously claim it when I feel it, but yet at the same time, I'm also going to rebel if you don't, kind of like somebody coming up against those boundaries.
Yeah.
You set that healthy boundary and they totally discard it. And then that's when I'm going to rebel. You know what I mean? So to me, it's that rebellion of not going back to the old, but claiming the new and, keeping on that new path. Then, like, I'm going to do what I need to do. I'll claim this, but if I need to rebel to get there, buckle up because it's going to be a ride,
And I mean, I think it goes back to, again, being like being the villain in some of the stories when you come to, because in some families, I would say in my family, even it's that it does feel like you are going against the grain, which Rebel's really good at, but it does feel like you're going against the grain. Hi. And it feels like in some families, some circumstances, some energies that you are going against the grain and being a rebel by doing what's best for you. And how sick is that, that in our minds in this world that we feel like we are the rebel because we're trying to do what's best for ourselves?
Well, I was depicted the rebel as a child, and I just grew into it.
Grew into it.
So, yeah, grew into the good side of the rebel now.
I think it's
Not so much
wild.
into breaking laws and everything, like I
No. Be
was back then, but.
if you call me a rebel.
Right.
Thank you, Shalisai. Thank you. Thank you. So if someone is listening right now and they're just waking up to their family patterns, what is the first step that you, what's the first thing you would tell them? Run. No.
Buckle up and be prepared because this road is going to take you far deeper than you ever thought you would go. At least in my experience, I thought I was deep and then, would move through that little piece and then something like way deeper. And I'm like, oh,
Yeah.
ew. And then here we go. We're going to move through this one, So I think it's. Just be prepared if you take this on, but also know the end because, like we said before, this is not only just for us, it's the past lineage as well as the future lineage that benefits from all of this.
And in our
And if you
circumstance,
are a pattern breaker, I'm sorry, but yet at the same time, I feel it's an honor to be able to be the breaker. You know, it sucks because you gotta go through all the motions to get there, just like any other healing, but it's not for the faint of heart.
It's
Especially
not.
when those patterns are still instilled in the people that you're trying to break them with, even for yourself, not necessarily with them, but just break it for yourself, but still having to have that family around or whoever it is, and it's gonna get rough. But it's very, very rewarding
Really is.
at the end.
It really is. I think that it is the most rewarding shadow work, and then this, which it kind of all goes together, but it's It's so rewarding for yourself, but it's also rewarding once you start down the rabbit hole and you're sharing your story and you see other people come through it. I think that is the most breathtaking thing that I get to walk away with is that I'm learning every time I teach, right? It's continuous learning for me, forever student. But when you're walking through it, other people see that in themselves, right? We talk about that mirror. The mirror
Yeah,
and
the
the mirror. But within our community, we talk a lot about the mirror, and it's that we all see different parts of ourselves and other people. And so that is one of the most rewarding parts, but you have to keep going to get there, right? You cannot start your healing, your shadow work, your whatever you want to call it, generational healing or self-reflection, and think, okay, well, Kitty, I've been doing it for 3 days. I don't know what you're talking about. Because you can do it for months and months and months, and then you can think that you understood something about yourself. And then it's always cyclical. It's like an onion. It's cyclical. You're going to come back to it, and something's going to happen again that's the exact same. And it's the exact same pattern of your family, the exact same pattern for you. Are you going to react the same, or are you going to react differently? Are you going to talk to your newfound friends? Are you going to go to your community? Are you going to pick up a book? Are you going to pay attention to how you're reacting? Or are you going to fly off the handle? And depending on how you answer, it's going to come around again. Yeah, I think that on the layering of the things, I know I talked to you briefly one time about, we all know my brother passed away from drugs, and it was this very horrible event for me, and I can talk about it openly now and be okay. But all the time, I thought it was about me losing my brother. He's gone. He's not here. All these different things that are normal grieving things. 10, 12 years down the line, I realized this year, his death date came, and I realized, oh my gosh. I felt like he abandoned me. I was mad at him for so long. Processing through the death wasn't just processing through the death. It was me also processing, like, you were supposed to be by me. You're the one that knew everything that we went through, and you were the closest one to me in age to even understand anything that I went through. And you left, and so it was like, so that's what we're talking about. We're talking about like layers. It's like, yeah, okay, that happened. And I thought it was fine, and I'm good, right? And I'm grateful for all the experiences regarding that. But here comes this, and so you have to understand that it does, it cycles back around. And so then it's like, okay, well, I feel like I've been abandoned. Okay, so that explains why, I close off to people because people, not of their own accord left this planet, and that's not even something, that you have control over. So some of these things are things that subconsciously your body says this is what it is, but as an adult, you can't really be abandoned because you can take care of yourself, and so no one can, they can leave you physically, but abandon is you can't take care of yourself and they leave you. And I learned that I was processing, you left me, you abandoned me, you're supposed to stay here the whole time. And then I was like, wait, what the fuck is that? Like, I already worked through all this. And so the layers come and they may continue to come, but that's growth too. So when you start seeing things differently, it shows that you're working through, and that's a good thing. Again, it's to be celebrated from all of us. What does breaking generational cycles look like in real time? Not like let's heal. It's so fun. It's fine. Everything's fine. What does it look like in real time?
For me, in real time, it's all of the emotions, the anger, the guilt, the shame, the every emotion you can think of, but yet also realizing that if I wasn't aware of it in the, say in an argument, I started yelling, screaming, and let that anger back out again, without being aware of it, that I was reaching that limit. And it's It's just because you get it right this time. Just know you're not gonna get it right every time because it's something we're not always aware of.
Yeah.
So for me, in that present moment is just trying to hone in on the awareness of my reactions. What triggered me for those for those actions or reactions, and then kind of analyze that from there. Is this trauma being triggered? Is this a cycle? Is this a, yada, 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 and go down that whole rabbit hole of kind of just dissecting it to kind of help me be more aware. So when this situation comes up, again, that I can be more aware in that moment. But just know you're not going to get it
Yeah.
right the first time, and it's always going to be right. You're going to fall back into those patterns repeatedly. So for me, it's the frustration, but yet the drive to keep
Yeah.
changing it.
Yeah, I think for me, humbling yourself enough to apologize is a huge part for me. And what does it look like in real time? Real time is, I said something to my teenager and I apologize because I shouldn't have done that. Or as an adult, I've apologized to my children who are adults that, man, I just wish I would have raised you from a more healed version. I'm sorry you got like literally the worst version of or whatever. And that could mean like you could go back into, I know AA does it and different things do it, but you could go and write letters to people that you know that you've hurt. Like understanding the guilt that comes with healing also, right? Because you have made mistakes and you have hurt people. You're a person, right? And you can only hope that someone who you've hurt looks at you through the eyes of grace of what you're looking at other people around you with, because it doesn't often happen that way. So if you can humble yourself enough to apologize to people and be vulnerable about where you're at, I think that does wonders in the healing process. I think it does wonders, don't you think? And I think that that's hard as a mom, but I also think that's hard as friends. I think that's hard in any relationships. I think it's hard from like child to parent, parent to child. Like, no one wants to apologize. No one wants to say, I'm wrong. But be okay being wrong. Like, be okay being wrong. You fucked up. People fuck up. Everybody fucks up. We all fuck up. It's all about that. But I think when people can see you to be vulnerable and say, I'm sorry, I was wrong, I think that opens up a lot of doors for the healing to spread like wildfire wherever it's going to go.
Agree.
Yeah. I think in the moment, healing is messy. It's gross. It's sad. It's happy. It's excited. Exciting. It's terrifying. It's
Pressing. Yeah.
depressing. You're going to cry. You're going to laugh. But the moment that you have that first aha moment is really a cool moment. And that's what you need to go for when you first start. The moment you have the first aha moment and you're like, oh my God, it's over for you. Like, it's over for you in such a good way because it sends you down all these different rabbit holes of trying to understand what else do I not know about myself? Like, you realize you're really a cool fucking person. You're worth knowing. You have a lot of really cool things in there that are not just like, oh, that's just who she is. No, it's not who I am. Like, it's not. And it's like, oh, it's just who Rebel is. It's just who she is. It's like, no, you get to choose what you keep. You get to choose the people you keep in your life. You get to choose who you are, right? It's time to have an active like response in your life of building the life that you want and the people that are around you, right? It's just so important. Right, Rebel?
That's right.
Build your
It is very
life.
important.
If you could give anyone a piece of advice that's struggling mentally right now, what is a piece of advice you would give them that would impact them? You hope would impact them.
I would say that no matter the struggles, that storms that you're going through, that the sun always comes out, the clouds always clear. Just hang in there. I know it feels like the world's ending, but
It might be, you never know. Stay in time, you just don't know. Someone gonna push
And what if it
the
ends, then we probably won't know
button?
about it.
Right.
So,
Right.
yeah.
Yeah.
But no, if it, if it feels like everything's ending, just hold on. Because usually when it feels like your world's falling apart, it's usually something stepping in to allow you new space to recreate or grow or anything like that. So don't give up on it. Just keep going.
I always tell mine was always, this too shall pass. It might feel like a tumor or something, but it'll pass. It might not feel very good, but it always will pass. So that is something that is worth holding on to because you don't know what's going to come next. So I am going to just end on this note. If you're struggling with any kind of struggle. If you're working through generational trauma, you want to know about shadow work, you want to know about paranormal, if you want to know about dream interpretation, we do have a community called the Authentic Life Collective. And this is what we do. Rebel's a leader in it. I'm a leader in it. This is what we do in our community almost daily within the chats and forums. But we do teach, we do offer workshops, we do retreats, we do all different kinds of things. So please reach out. And if we are not the ones that can help you, we can definitely give you some ideas and other places perhaps that we could recommend.